Welcome to the Tom and Curly Show. I am Mike Lewis. I'm joined by Dre's. It's our final day of the Occupy Tom and Curly Show movement.
We're never leaving.
We're not leaving. And in fact, I'm curious. Do you think Jake Rummel is on our side, or do you think he's just waiting for us to go home?
You know what? I think he likes it with us.
You think so?
Yeah.
Do you think that the other guys would feel, if they bothered listening to the show, do you think they'd feel jealous?
They're not listening to us. What guy on varsity goes to watch a JV game? It doesn't happen.
It just makes it kind of pitiful, doesn't it?
Even the jerseys aren't right.
It's even like going back to your high school in your Letterman's jacket. It's just, maybe that's just not something you do.
But it's beautiful outside today, right?
Today, to the extent that we can see the sun, which we can through like three additional windows.
Right.
We see the evidence of the sun.
Yes.
It's actually a beautiful day out there. So there are A's and then there are A's. And there are A's and whatever A's stand for, right? Well, this is a story about Seattle's Lady A, who apparently, as you may know or may not know, is not the only Lady A out there. Let's play a little bit of what she's about.
Can't even eat popcorn on your couch. Police with guns to your head in your own house. George, Eric, Sandra Bland.
Lady A, Seattle's Lady A.
That was hot.
I know. It was good.
That was hot. Okay.
Seattle's Lady A, who has been Lady A for a long time, is in a bit of a battle with the group formerly known as Lady Antebellum, now the group that wants Lady A, and generously, even though they came to the Lady A game late, generously offered to share the name with the Lady A who was there before them, and it didn't quite go as well as they would have hoped.
I don't really know how I feel about this. You know what I mean? I don't know if I feel like the original Lady A needs to have the name, or is there kind of like, I'm from a world where first man to the top of the mountain wins.
Right.
Like, my name's Dre's. I'm a hip-hop artist.
Right.
There's a bunch of Dre's out there. There's like a Dre's rock band, all these other things, right?
Which one of you has the trademark?
You know what the funniest part about it is? None of us have it right now.
Right now.
So right now. Yeah, first man to the top wins.
Wait, he's leaving the room. He's filing paperwork as we speak. So the dispute is, of course, that they came, they knew that they found out there's another Lady A out there who, and the band had filed for copyright on this particular name. She had not, but she had been performing under this name, and that actually does carry a certain level of legal authority.
Yes.
If you've been performing under a name for a period of time, even if you haven't gone through the proper copywriting procedure, they met, they talked, she felt much like she was not being listened to. And then there's the subtext of what this fight is really about.
Mm-hmm.
And what this fight is really about is a popular group, white group, decides that the term antebellum, which technically means, I think, after the flood, but it refers to the South post-Civil War or pre-Civil War?
Post.
Post-Civil War, exactly. Yeah. So the idea that they wanted to shed that from their name, they felt like maybe it had outlived its usefulness or its acceptableness.
Mm-hmm.
They want to change their name to Lady A. Lady A is sitting there with the name. They copyright it anyway, go for it, try to negotiate with her to somehow some sort of name-sharing arrangement. And she finally pushes back and says, "No, I don't agree with not only with your tactics. I don't think you're listening to me."
Well, I think, you know what? In all honesty, good for her, right? To being willing to stand up to Lady A, the big Lady A, and it's kind of like, you know, at the end of the day, I have some conflicted feelings on it, because on one hand, I don't like the undertones of just it being kind of like white privilege, okay? So I've heard that terminology thrown around, white privilege. I don't necessarily view it as white privilege. I view it as kind of that celebrity privilege, if you want,
right?
Which is not just white.
Wealth privilege,
right. And so that part of it, I like her kind of standing up to them and saying, guys, the answer is no. I appreciate them saying, could we share the name and asking, but they have to understand for her, this is a lose-lose. If you've ever been the little man, are you kidding me? Why would I want to share the name I've been representing for the last 40 years or so?
Right.
And then you come in and now you want to be Lady A. You're going to stomp me out, right?
Right.
Like all of it. It's not like I'm going to get new fans.
They're going to move right in front of whatever the sun had been for her.
Right.
And,
right.
And everything suddenly is there's no more light coming in. Well, all right. So you've got a more being in the industry in particular, you've got maybe a more nuanced view. It seems to me like, so what is the value? I mean, Lady Antebellum's already ditching its original name.
Yep.
So if you're searching for that, you'll still find them.
Yep.
And then you'll probably find the links to the new name. What is the necessity? Why wouldn't you just back up and say, because bands have had these name fights before. This is not terribly unusual, actually.
Right. Right.
Why not just back up and say, well, we'll go with a new name?
Yeah. L.A., right? I mean, I don't know. Like, figure it out, right?
Right.
But you have to find a way to do this without stepping on someone. The thing I do like about Lady A, though, is that I love not only is she fighting, I think this could be a bigger problem for the group, right? I think this if she continues to sound the drum and to go off, people are going to continue to side with her because no one likes the big guy rolling over on the little guy anymore.
Well, and it was a good story, really terrific story in the Seattle Times today. The other thing about it, of course, is that she's getting interview requests from all over. I mean, this is not actually. I mean, it's overall. It's. I'm assuming she would characterize it as a hurtful process.
Yeah.
But right now, she's getting a whole load of attention as a result of this. She said interviews from publications in Paris.
Yep.
I mean, she is getting
yep.
that whole because in a weird way, the fight coming to her isn't necessarily a bad thing in terms of getting attention on her music.
And fan base is growing, right? She
right.
started talking about how there's listeners everywhere. It was right. kind of funny, though, that it was like she's mailing CDs all over the country and the world. I was like, CDs? I'm like, you do know that Spotify and, you know what I mean, Apple Music are available. Like, you could get it to your fans a lot quicker. But
well, there's a good question about that, though. What about if on Spotify...
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess you can also get the benefit of that. What if on Spotify someone does a Lady A search? Given that somebody else has already registered for the trademark, who's Lady A on Spotify, and how does Spotify decide on that?
I think they would both be there. I think the question is who's on top, right? And I know what the answer is. Because Spotify is going to go... they're gonna
their
go
algorithm with, is not going to account for her.
That's entirely true. It's cool to see her kind of fighting back and growing. I love that her fan base is growing. And most importantly, I like that her music was good.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's the better part about the whole thing is actually she's legit.
Yeah.
And she's, and I got to say, local, so I already give, you know, want to give a nod to that. Speaking of music, though, so the president has, and this has actually been probably more effectively used by the music industry than almost anyone else.
Okay.
TikTok.
Okay.
The president has gone great guns at TikTok now and a couple of Chinese social media platforms, but primarily TikTok. He is irritated. It had a reputation as being somewhat of a Chinese data sieve. Like it was just harvesting data from not just from the United States. It's a massively popular worldwide platform. It tends to be quick, short videos. You throw a whole bunch of them out there. You see what sticks.
Yep.
Famously... Old Town Road was initially made popular on TikTok. Meme. And it was brilliant, actually. It was really well done. I imagine you said I think your daughter uses
my
TikTok?
My daughter, yes. I don't use TikTok. I tried. It was a little too TikTok-y for me, right?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I don't TikTok, right? And so it was a little much, but I will say this. Because the videos feed through everything, Instagram, Facebook. So you see these videos on your feed, and as I see them, I really like what they do with the platform. I like the videos that come through them. I really like the stuff with families, right, where you just kind of – it's this interesting way that you see, like, prank videos where there's a son pranking his father or a mother and daughter or dance videos, right, where you see –
the dance stuff is consistent on TikTok.
Yeah.
There's always a good dance video that – good one. There's always a good million dance videos on TikTok.
Yeah.
Well, so in the Telegraph today, a guy named Chris Stokelwalker, who we've interviewed here at Cairo Radio before, he's an expert on tech. He talks about how the war on TikTok, Trump's war on TikTok, is kind of a war not really, I don't know, he's not necessarily saying intentionally, but inadvertently, on youth culture, because the people who use TikTok, and this is an interesting thing, and let me just read you from the story. Mm-hmm. In a late June meeting, TikTok held an online meeting with advertisers and creators where it claimed the audience was incremental. In other words, 72% of TikTok users are not on Twitter. 45% are not on Facebook. 43% are not on Instagram. Even when compared to Snapchat, which is also popular among young users, mm-hmm. a quarter of TikTok users are, quote, unduplicated. In other words, they are only on TikTok, which if you're an advertising executive, you just start getting your heart rate goes up and you start going, oh my, how do I get involved in this thing? Like it's, and you can see then why the music industry was very, and individual bands, the K-pop bands were so smart about jumping on this platform early because they're scooping up an entire group of people. And for those of you who don't follow social media statistics, your kids are probably not on Facebook.
Yeah.
Or at least they're barely on it. They're not really on YouTube much. They may follow an influencer or two on YouTube, and they may post from time to time. But all these other platforms don't have that sort of immediate, unfiltered nature that TikTok has.
Snapchat, TikTok, those are the ones that I kind of see in my home from my 19-year-old. She's huge with Snapchat. But reading those numbers was staggering, right, to see what they have. And it makes a lot of sense. When I start looking at my world personally, again, as a hip-hop artist or a person in the music world, you start to see the trends and you know them when you start to see there's always a growing trend in music.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, there's all these classes and all of these, here's the social media experts come around. This is what you need to do. And all of a sudden, there's this massive stuff like, you need to be on TikTok. Right. And I'm going to show you why. Right. And it's just like, and as I go to everything, I study, I learn as much as I can. And TikTok is a viable medium for a lot of people. So I understand when this article is saying it could be a war on the young culture. Well, I don't agree, right? There's so much more to the youth culture than just TikTok, but I understand where the premise comes from.
So, but at what point will you find yourself? I mean, I get what you just said.
Yeah.
But at what point will you find yourself? You've identified some young, really talented guy, some young, really talented woman, and you find yourself in a studio with him saying, you know, you got to get yourself on TikTok.
You know what? I'm the type to advise that right away. Oh. If it's someone else, right?
You,
but what's good for you may not be good for me, realistically, right?
Yeah.
So sometimes I work with really young artists, and I'm saying, look, you got to tap into what's best for you. I'm no idiot. My fan base is not 19 years old.
Right.
Right. So the bulk of my fan base is going to be somewhere between 24 going all the way up. So you get... It trickles down, but by and large, I know my fan. So, you know, my fan is not on TikTok.
Your fans are not. That's a
fair
point.
They're not on TikTok. So for someone young, I'm going to say you need to get there. You need to tap that. It also is the type of music you're doing.
Right. So wait, let me back up on a moment, though. So how I never really thought about this. How, as an artist, do you even know the demographics of your fans? I mean, do you actually get information on this, or is that just kind of an assumption you make, or how does that actually work?
It's awesome, man. To be honest with you, the analytics that all of these social media platforms are giving us, it is, and I'm not just talking for me as a band artist, I'm talking if you're a business, anything. You can get right down to the nitty gritty. You can know the age. You can know how many people you. I can tell you what cities
and this
are
is,
my
but,
biggest.
But, so this would be data provided by, say, Spotify or data provided by Pandora?
All of the above. Every single one of them. Facebook provides it. Instagram provides it. Spotify provides it. Everyone wants to get you as much information as possible so you can pay them to reach. You can reach your fan, right?
Right.
And so they can tell you, look, here are the people your music is connecting with, right? You need to keep going after these types of people.
When does that data start influencing? When do you start moving into a feedback loop? When do you? Because I've always worried about in media, because I've seen a lot of that data. When I was an editor for AOL, we had this thing called Chartbeat.
Yep.
Chartbeat would give you that same sort of granular data on every story you write and on the headlines and blah blah blah. And you would see people immediately want to start gaming it, immediately wanting to do those things. And in fact, famously, I gamed it just to see if we could. Our numbers weren't quite getting where they wanted. There was a famous story about Huffington Post having the most popular story in the nation, maybe in the world, 1 year, like maybe like 8 years ago, and early in HuffPo, because somebody wrote a two-paragraph story, and the headline was, "What time is the Super Bowl?" And it was telling you what time the that's all the story was.
Yeah.
But that search term was so
big,
pervasive.
Yeah.
So locally, okay. I did. What time are the 4th of July fireworks? Well, the answer is sunset, actually. But it became, it erupted locally. It was we generated numbers and so to what end? It was a garbage story, right? But we got the numbers that the bosses wanted.
Okay, so I'll give you this. There is some of that involved. So I was about to tell you never.
Right.
I'll never do it. I'm a purist, right? I am a purist as a hip hop artist, but I have a team. And they are not purists. They are vested in one thing and one thing only. And they are like, dude, we need to create some clickbait.
Right?
And so there comes a point where we do lean in a little bit where it's like, well, we're not going to lie. Let's bend the truth here, or let's create affiliations or stuff like that. So there are points when you're clicking and you're, but what I won't do is I'm riding the horse. The horse won't ride me. At the end of the day, I'm making music that I love. I won't start making music for that.
If you won't start thinking about that 24-year-old, allegorically perfect,
I'm making the music for the issues or whatever moves my heart. That part is embedded in me by my parents. I'll do that, and then what we do to market it, now that might be a little TikTok-y.
Yeah, that might actually go into the numbers. All right, coming up, can addiction to success treat you in the same way as addiction to drugs or booze? It turns out that maybe that's the case in just a minute.
We are back. It's the Tom and Curly Show, and we're not Tom, Curly, or Jerry. It's Dre's. I'm with my guy, Mike Lewis. How you doing, man?
I'm doing fine. And just for you folks who are Tom and Curly addicts, John will be back next week, and Tom will be back the week after.
So there's this fascinating article that we were just reading through and talking about.
Speaking of addicts.
Speaking of addicts, right? So the idea here is that success addicts, the thought process being that there is such thing as a success addict, the same way that some people get a dopamine hit, if you will, from an alcohol or from likes on Facebook, or TikTok, whatever that is, right? There are other people who get that kind of a hit, right? Just from something like success. And it ends up turning things on their head and disrupting their life the exact same way that an addiction to alcohol is, would, or something like that, right? Have you ever seen anything like this, heard of it, and what do you think about it?
I went back and forth on this. And weirdly enough, these stories that I think one thing and then think another, then think another, then think another, I kind of like those. I like the ones that sort of force me back and forth and I can't decide where I'm at on this. It seemed to me like what the story really might be saying. So these people will do anything to achieve success. They'll miss their kids' Little League game, whatever, because they've got business appointments to make. They need to be hard charging in that regard. But what they don't really say in this, so let me just ask you, as you've had more success in the music industry, are you less happy?
Less happy?
Yeah.
No.
All right. So maybe what they're saying.
No.
So maybe what they're saying is the people who are striving for success yet remain unsuccessful are the people who really have the problem, and the people who get. I mean, because there is. They're sort of creating, I don't know, a false dichotomy, right? Like that.
Okay.
That they're that you're you can achieve success or you can achieve happiness.
Okay.
And sometimes you can achieve both. I mean, sometimes your success can make you happy. I think what they're saying is the people who are success obsessive are the ones who will carve away at their other happiness. But if they're success obsessives, and maybe that's something that they need to sort of get treatment for, maybe then they would not be happy if they just turned down the rheostat and hung out with their family.
See, I got something completely different from this article.
Okay.
So I'm looking at kind of the, as you say, success obsessives. I look from it and I go, in order to be truly great at anything, you have to be a success obsessive. That's a part of it. Michael Jordan, you keep going down the line. Prince, I wasn't around him. Michael Jackson, whatever it is.
Right.
The people in our society who we go, oh my God, that guy is a genius. at whatever he does. He's a success obsessive, and his family or her family, someone is paying the price,
yeah,
by and large,
no doubt,
because he is addicted. He gets that hit. There's nothing like Prince writing a new song and going, ah, 3 a.m, he's getting up out of the bed. Apollonia's laying there.
Right.
He jumps out. He's got to go play the guitar and get it going.
Yeah, all right. So I'll give you that. But for every Michael Jordan who is successful, who we know about,
yep,
because he was successful, there are the other people who, what I'm saying, like, who maybe are just as obsessive and maybe just as much are carving other things out of their life who we don't know about. And why? Because they weren't actually good at whatever they were doing, or potentially not as good at whatever they were doing. And so are those people, are those the ones who need to have an off switch to maybe go towards something? I mean, if you're successful and you have tremendous regrets, and I imagine, yeah, every successful person does, you have tremendous regrets about the things you haven't done, the relationships that you've let,
yeah,
that you've walked away from or just let dissolve, then I suppose that the success comes with a cost. The anecdote in this one, the kind of interesting one, and it is mythology, but nonetheless, they talk about Achilles and how Achilles, just before the big battle at Troy, Achilles is greeted or gets some sort of vision of he could right now go home and live out his life, mm-hmm, to an old age with his wife and his
no
kids,
chance.
Or he could have, he knows he's going to die.
Yes.
But he could have eternal glory.
Go, Achilles!
And I gotta say, if I'm Achilles, obviously no mythology is written about me because I just go home.
Go to Achilles, go, charge ahead.
Right.
I mean,
would you go home or would you?
No chance, man. Go to the battle. This is it. It's Waterloo. Let's go.
I would text ahead. I forgot about an appointment.
Do you remember in Forrest Gump, Lieutenant Dan?
Yes.
How mad he was at Forrest Gump for not allowing him to die on the field.
Right.
I'm Lieutenant Dan. I have to die on the field. I have a place I have to be. But I want to take a step back because you talked about two different types of people. There's this genius who's amazing. Then there's the other guy who's not
right.
necessarily
but
so
just
much.
As obsessive.
Yes. Both of them, I think, I want to be clear. Both of them need to learn work-life balance. My philosophy is not that the genius is right. Right? Like Steve Jobs.
But sometimes we do that, reverse engineering. Sometimes we assume that it's okay because, well, look what he did.
The money is the problem.
Like, right.
When we start, our false definition of success is, did you financially make it?
Right.
But I was like Steve Jobs reading the letter that he pins before he passes away. This is a man who's tremendously successful. And the one thing he's talking about is family and loved ones and who he didn't spend time with. So for me, yes, if I'm giving advice, absolutely. Like, my wife to this day is like, we're planning our vacations before you plan a tour, before you plan shows, before you book anything, right? All of those things, we're going to make sure family time is locked and loaded, and then everything else is going to have to fit around that, and you may not get as high as you would have gotten. That's going to be the price of balance and not wanting to look back with major regrets.
But would you also say that maybe you're achieving more,
yes,
if you do take that time away? I mean, in other words, that you're not when you're working, you're all in and you're working,
yeah,
hard, and you're not distracted by the fact that you're missing something important or that you have blown off somebody who you should have been hanging out with, or that you know that your kid is maybe, you know, making a turn you don't want them to. It's early, but you're still a little bit distracted by it, but yet you're on a business trip or you're down in Los Angeles or something like that. I mean,
yes. Yeah, well, it's kind of like the philosophy around rest, right? Some people want to work, and they feel like if I do more work, I don't have time for rest. Well, actually, your production level is tied to your rest. So the more rest, the better you're going to work. You're going to be more productive, right? So you actually need to rest. So you need the family time. You need the loved one times. You need to go eat ice cream with your kid and,
right,
and tune out. And when it's work time's off, it's over. But I want to ask you, what's your dopamine hit? What is your thing? You have a bar. What is it? There's something in there, man, that gets you going. What is it?
I think one in the bar,
uh-huh,
you know, one of the things that surprised me at how great it felt was to look at what we paid annually in payroll. And
okay,
not in a way, yeah, that meant we were cheap, in, yeah, what people were actually making. And that, I mean, because as a business owner, you feel a little bit like, You helped create a job,
yeah,
and hopefully you created a good one. We rarely have somebody walk away, and usually if they do, it's moving away or something like that. It's,
yeah,
not regarding, I would say that the relationship with the employees is one of the biggest things. And I would say on those nights when you walk in, man, I can't even bottle up this thing.
Yeah.
When you walk in and everyone's having a good time and it's humming along and they're in the bar and they're digging and they're not planning on going anywhere.
Yeah.
Like that thing to me is magic. I could never get enough of that.
You know what's magic? Watching you say that. I wish everyone could see that because you could see your genuine look. The dopamines are already they're firing right now.
That's the sadness that we can't do that right now. Yeah. But you're right. I mean, like when you have those moments, and you sort of like life is just bridging between those moments, right?
Yeah. So is there in relationship to that moment, right? So I want to keep leaning in there. If you have that moment, you walk in the bar and it's packed and it's cracking. Shout out to the Kraken. And you have this great, you got this great moment happening. So then for you, is there a part of you that gets drawn into that? And does it ever fight against your work-life balance?
Oh, all the time. Yeah. I mean, because inevitably that moment will be broken because, you know, a cooler will go out, freezer will go out or something. Yeah. And then suddenly that all comes and you have to go fix something or someone has done a horrible thing to your toilet, which happens, you know, once a week. I mean, I don't even know. My side theory is that you should not be granted a liquor license in Washington State unless you're a journeyman plumber, because there is nothing but plumbing problems if you own a bar. But yes, of course that does. I mean, what about you? Like, when do you have that moment when it feels like perfect?
Oh man, on stage, right? Like
really?
At the end of the day, I'm a stage guy. The studio's awesome too. There's a bunch of them along the way. Number one, the moment the inspiration comes for a song and you're ready to, whether it's creating a beat or hearing a beat, and I'm like, ooh, I gotta go at this track, right? So that's one moment. A secondary moment would be when you're in the studio and you're laying the track or the playback. The first time you really hear the playback done and it's lightly mixed and you're like, oh, I got him on this one. Right. This is it, right? And then the other moment is all the way around. So it does create, as I'm saying this, it's a process of like one high to the next, right? It's one fix. The next fix after I hear that song is like, well, we got to get this song out. The next fix is the response, right? Oh, they love it. Okay, well, now we got to get on stage and perform it. And then it's like, now we got to do it again, right? And so it's a revolving door. Yes, it can get in the way of work-life balance because you have a family. And there are times where when I start to hear my daughter say, you're just always on the phone. That's when I know, okay, reminder, time to step back, start setting boundaries, because my commitment is to my family first, right? And it's not in word, in actual action. I've got to put them first. And so I'm not saying that I don't toe the line and drift off a little bit every now and again. But once I'm called on it, I like to believe that I pull back. And there are some times where there's a season where I'm like, baby girl, it's just daddy's going to be a little busy for the next week or two. You know what I mean? And as soon as that's over, you know, we'll be ready to rock and roll. So I don't know which one we're at here.
Oh, so we're going to talk about, well, your favorite subject and my favorite subject, sports and hygiene, and how are we going to keep playing sports, professional sports, and still occupy some sort of area that is actually a safe space when it comes to coronavirus. Coming up next.
Thank God it's Friday. We are back. Tom and Curly Show. It's your boy Dre's. I got my guy, Mike Lewis. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great.
Still rocking and rolling.
Still rocking and rolling, and still, I guess, the last day of our occupation here.
The last dance. Mike, I'm Scotty. Let's go. Six rings, right? Let's go.
All right.
Anyway, so have you been watching any basketball or anything?
Yeah, of course I have, yeah.
A little bit, huh?
A little bit.
So there's this story right now about how sports, the coronavirus, and hygiene mix. So we're talking all sports, and it's really, dare I say, disgusting when you
think about it. Yes.
When you think of all of the fluids that come out of humans, you know what I mean? Like, there's actually a point where there's this guy, Jordy Ben, who's in the NHL, who talks about what he calls clearing the runway. I guess where they grab one nostril, they push against it, and they just, you know, mucus.
Evacuate.
They evacuate the mucus. It's like, so it got me thinking of all of the different ways that that athletes are having to engage and get around the coronavirus, right? Considering that. Basketball, I mean, these guys, it's a contact sport.
No, I mean, you know, I don't know, did you grow up playing any basketball?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I did too, and that was always my sport of choice. I mean, you could go out there, if you're playing, let's just say that your team's finally got on court because somebody lost and you got your five and you're out there, yeah, and you're still dry because you haven't played yet, but you get, like, slapped up against somebody,
yeah,
and you're immediately as sweaty as they are. You know that feeling. It's worse when you're dry and they're not. And it's disgusting, right? And think about it in today's terms, how awful that is.
It's disgusting at LA Fitness, right? Like, you're just right down there running some hoop, and there's a guy, for whatever reasons, it's shirts and skins. Why? I have no idea.
Why do we even do that? I bet that goes away.
Yeah, absolutely. And the new NBA, I'm like, everyone's shooting threes. No one posts anyone up. But this guy wants to post you up. He backs you down. You've got sweat across your cheek. You know what I mean? That's completely disgusting. But there's so much, though, to be honest. I think about the NFL and how it's hand-to-hand combat for linemen. Every single play.
Well, and you also, I would suggest anyone who hasn't looked closely at NFL films, watch how often you see, let's just wait to like the halftime when people are walking off, how much actual blood you see on jerseys.
Yeah.
It's a shocking amount.
It is.
It's a shocking amount.
It will completely blow your doors. I think the things that are even more shocking to me are the little things. Right, the little things like how many times you grab your nose, right? Pitchers, how often they lick their fingers,
right?
Or a batter. I mean, how many times does he walk into the batter's box, he pulls back, he spits 2-3 times, he comes right back in the batter's box. I'm like, they're spitting pitchers and batters are spitting every single.
Well, and then just take a look at I have some reporter friends and photographer friends who covered the Mariners a lot back in the days where there was still more chewing tobacco,
mm-hmm,
and it was like, mm-hmm, they said it was like a puddle of chewing tobacco juice on the floor of the dugout, because they also, baseball players have the great privilege of sitting for much of the game, and so they are sitting there now at sunflower seeds, and they'll you know, chew and spit. I don't know how you.
My wife is completely grossed out right now. I know she's listening. And once you started talking about tobacco and a puddle, she's done. Yeah. I mean, the other little things that you think about are like the Gatorade bottle, right? I mean, the small one that the guy grabs and he puts his hand. When you're sweating, everything's sweating. Your hand's sweating. You pick it up. You have a little Gatorade. You put it back down. Probably the most disgusting thing I saw in this entire article was Mark Schlereth from ESPN talking about he threw up before every game. So he's just, you know, into a garbage can. So he's not even putting his head in the commode. No. He's grabbing a garbage can, throwing up. And I've seen enough videos on COVID to know that stuff's floating in the air, man.
Well, and then you start yelling at someone or you start trash talking someone. And suddenly, you know, you've got this situation where you're all that other stuff you've already done all over the field.
Yeah.
Now you're spraying in somebody's face because you're fake. Because it's not like you trash talk at 20 yards.
Yeah.
You get right up in someone's grill, right?
Yeah. Well, next up, we'll be right back. We're going to talk about why one team named the Indians won't change their name. You definitely want to stick around for this.